Capital. This is the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting of October 21st. We're in room 423. My name is Gary Hansen, and with me today, today are my fellow commissioners, Dusty Johnson and Steve Colbeck. We will check to see who's on the phone with us this morning. Kenna Hagen.
Yes, Kenna Hagen here for Black Hills Power.
Colleen Sebold.
Good morning. Yes, I'm here.
George Thompson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Wilcox.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Nathan Solem. Paul Lind. Paul Lindy.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Tal Wazorik.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Mary Sisak.
Present.
Phil Schenkenberg.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Here on behalf of Verizon Wireless.
Chris Collier.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Joanne Horman.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Jeff Decker.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Don Peterson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Ken Gates. Ken Gates. We haven't heard from Nathan Solem or Ken Gates. Is there anyone else on the line with us this morning? We'll proceed then with administration approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on June 24th, 2008. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Any changes, corrections, deletions to be made to the minutes? If not, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Consumer reports. Status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. The commission has received a total of 96 contacts since the last report was prepared for the October 7th, 2008 commission meeting. 27 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 33 of the contacts involved electric services, 2 contacts involved electrical and natural gas service, 3 contacts involved cell phone service, 17 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 14 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,962 of the 2,055 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved, and 2,328 of the 2,337 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Deb? If not, we have under consumer complaints, we have a number of items by a Mr. Loudner. Mr. Loudner, are you on the phone or with us today, or do you have any representation here? If not, I believe we should be able to take items 1 through 5 together, unless there's an objection to that. Would staff have any presentation on this at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Semler for staff. I believe the motion that staff filed does accurately go through the chain of events and the facts that led up to the meeting today and the issue before the commission today. I can certainly go over any of that if you'd like in more detail, but without question, I believe it speaks for itself. I would like to emphasize that Deb Gregg and our Consumer Affairs Office had several conversations with Mr. Loudner, as did I. The rules were always explained, and he's choosing not to be here today. He did receive a copy of the motion. We have it was sent certified, so we have confirmation of the receipt. And just ask that you hear the motions to dismiss on the November 12th meeting.
Thank you. So you've had a number of discussions with Mr. Loudner?
Correct. Both Deb Gregg and I have. And we've explained the process in all conversations, and he's just chosen not to abide by those rules.
Thank you very much. Any questions by commissioners at this juncture?
And so if memory serves, I mean, he didn't want to go forward with a November date because of his concern with a pending thing he's got going on with social services, but social services says that's no longer pending.
Correct.
And so his response to that is?
Nothing.
Thank you.
Are there any institutions that wish to make presentation on this item? Any of the utilities? Any other staff have anything they wish to present? All right, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Smith, Commission Advisor. The only thing I'm going to bring up is it did occur to me that we might want to notice this as at least in some parts of it, to be considered by the commission as motions for summary judgment. And my only reason for bringing that up is that it hits me that at least in a few cases, with some of these things, there may be some tangential factual considerations where we have facts that are probably not in dispute that the commission may need to consider to resolve these things. And we've done that before in cases where we've had motions to dismiss filed, and when we deem it to maybe implicate factual matters to some extent, that I usually just prepare a notice of hearing. I do a formal service, as we would for any kind of dispositive thing, and notice it that way so in case we don't end up in that weird catch-22 where we end up wasting our time with just the wrong technical motion form. And I don't know if you have an observation on that, Ms. Semler, but I'm kind of leaning that way. That way we've at least opened up the legal possibility to broaden what the commission considers a little bit to maybe allow us to dispose of some of the things where it's not strictly the insufficiency of the of his initial pleading that's at issue.
This is Kara Summer. I think that would be a very efficient way for the commission to handle it that way. At the November 12th meeting, we could handle all issues, and we wouldn't need to attempt to reschedule another hearing to hear a summary judgment motion in the future. I think that would be an efficient way to handle it.
Any questions by the commissioners? Now, is there a motion?
A motion in CT08-001-003-004-005-006 that the commission grant staff's request to hear motions to dismiss at the November 12, 2008 commission meeting.
And recommendations is made by?
And per recommendations made by staff.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on that motion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Under electric dockets, EL08-001, in the matter of the application of XL Energy for a permit to construct 6.5 miles of 115 kV transmission line and associated modifications to the Brookings substation. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the second motion to extend final approval deadline? On October 14th, XL filed the second motion to extend final approval deadline. We'll hear from XL first.
Mr. Chairman, XL Energy is working with staff to conclude this facilities permit request. We need a little more time, so the company respectfully requests the commission grant this motion to extend the approval deadline.
Thank you. Mr. Gerst?
We hadn't talked as to who was going to talk, and so Mr. Wilson speaks for the company.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? Does staff have anything they wish to present?
Staff would recommend granting the second motion.
Thank you. Questions by commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the commission grant the second motion to extend the approval deadline.
Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Under pipeline safety, docket PS07-002, in the matter of the filing of the investigation of the natural gas incident of March 8, 2007 on Northwestern Energy System in Mitchell, South Dakota. Question before the commission is, today shall the commission reopen the docket and accept staff's amended safety report? I'd first like to hear from the commission, since the commission staff filed the request to reopen the docket. Filed the amended safety report. and staff, Ms. Semler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the report does speak for itself. I can answer any specific questions, and Northwestern is here, and they can also answer any questions. The filing became necessary after, and our request to reopen the docket became necessary after a meeting with Northwestern, where it became apparent that the previously filed report wasn't completely accurate. So we just simply asked for the docket to be reopened for the sole purpose of updating staff's report.
Thank you. Mr. Kenneke.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Brett Kenneke for Northwestern. We appreciate staff's work in working with us on this matter recently, and we did offer to produce an expert report as found at the bottom of page 2 of Ms. Semler's October 10th letter. We don't have that yet. We would ask you to grant staff's motion to reopen the docket and leave it open until such time as we could file that report, as we've indicated we would do. And then I presume we'll be back to ask you to close this matter after that. Thank you very much this morning.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Kenneke? We have, I don't know if Nathan, have you been able to join us? Right. And Paul Lindy, do you have anything that you wish to? I want to make sure.
No questions.
All right. Thank you. Staff, have anything further? Is there a motion?
I do have some questions, Mr. Chairman. If that's
please
okay.
Go ahead.
Ms. Semler, in the report, you talk about soil and ground conditions prevented any such positive reading that would normally occur. What kind of soil conditions would have prompted that?
As I understand it, it was a combination of the frozen ground and a combination of the soil type, which was clay. Is that correct? It was a cap that prevented a reading in places where normally a level of gas would be apparent if it were in the ground.
That's the company's understanding as well, Commissioner, that the frozen ground conditions in March, coupled with a layer of impermeable soil, produced a situation in which gas migration would have been difficult, if not impossible, to comprehend where it had gone. And especially with given the condition that there was a huge opening in the ground that occurred as a result of the event, it was originally thought that all of the gas would have escaped through that hole. It was later determined that was not the case, and of course no subsequent event causing damage or injury occurred as a result, thankfully. But we've agreed with staff to amend our manual and way of doing business in order to reflect this event which occurred. We'll know more about it in the future.
So just so I can understand what happens, you know, you've got the incident, frozen ground, you know, impermeable soil, big hole, people show up and they think, well, we'll take some readings. I think there were a couple of readings done, is that right? Near a sewer grate or?
Correct. The readings were done to the company was sure that there had been no gas that had gotten into the sewer system. It wasn't mm-hmm. traveling into other homes. They did readings on manholes and at the hole itself where the excavation was occurring, and there were no positive readings in either place.
Okay, but otherwise there might have been some soil borings taken because of all of the conditions we've talked about. The people on the scene thought, well, that those wouldn't be necessary, and that's...
Yeah, those were not done until Martin Bettman requested that they be done, and that's when the level of gas in the ground was discovered, and the company took appropriate safety precautions at that point.
So I know that Northwestern is going to revise its manual. I appreciate that. I mean, give me an idea. I mean, presumably frozen ground and impermeable soil is not an unheard of mm-hmm. condition. What would other operators do? Or, I mean, is the federal code silent on this sort of a situation, allowing a lot of discretion? Or
it does allow discretion, I believe. It doesn't require that the soil borings be done. It's staff's position that they should be done, and we are glad that they will be done in the future.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Past that, soil and ground conditions are generally not you know, completely known at any time. Borings might be down to a level which wouldn't necessarily tell you what was going on even beneath that. So we do need to be more diligent and more aware. It's pretty clear there was no violation of any rules or safety code. This condition existed that nobody could have predicted at the time. And like as I said, Commissioner, we'll be certainly more diligent in the future. No one wants to avoid safety problems more than Northwestern.
Well, yeah, I do want to make it clear, and I think the last sentence from staff in this section, you know, is important. Staff rescinds the proposed notices of violation and their corresponding fines. So when I'm asking questions, again, I'm just trying to figure out what would have been optimal, not necessarily what was required to have been done. So I think somewhere in staff's memo they talked about that not everybody understood that the testing that was being done to the pipe was for the benefit of all, and I'm not sure I understand that. Could somebody give me a little bit better? I mean, what was that for, if not? I mean, that destroyed the pipe from a perspective of future testing, right?
I think Northwestern is used to a process by which they do the testing, and we would have had our inspector there to observe. And in staff's opinion, which is why we handled it this way, there were so many interveners, and there was such fighting about how we get this pipe tested, we thought it would be most efficient for us to kind of take over the testing process. Everyone agreed to the protocol. We were all there. We all agreed to the protocol. We thought it would be most efficient for our third-party Stork testing laboratories to be the host site. And I think there was just some confusion in Northwestern. You know, it was just not accustomed to that way of doing it.
I'll be glad to address that if I can, Commissioner. I think the confusion resulted from our code requirement to produce a metallurgical report. Once the testing was done by another party and all the parties were involved, we felt like our obligation to produce that report had been obviated. Like, we didn't need to do that anymore because everybody was there. And so we've agreed to go ahead and produce that report in order to clear up any misconception that we might have had on our end. We just didn't think we had to do it anymore because everyone was allowed access to that report and that testing. And then staff said, no, you guys still have to file a report, and we said, very well, we'll be glad to do so. We don't have that done yet, and that's the coordination problems between me and the company's expert. We'll get that filed very shortly.
And that makes sense, thank you. And then, you know, I ask these questions tenderly because I know that, you know, the company and staff have been working together, and I know staff is very forthcoming in its memo about some of the things that could have been done better, but it seems as though not in one or two, or I mean, it seems like, you know, three or more instances there was sort of a miscommunication, or maybe information didn't get that Northwestern had that staff felt that it needed. I mean, I don't ask the question to place blame because these things are never very cut and dried. I mean, it's always sort of a swirl of data requests and information, and everybody's overworked. But can you give me an idea if we can be assured that something like that wouldn't happen again? And I ask because Northwestern, I mean, you all run a responsible company and try to build up, you know, a positive corporate image. And when incidences like this happen, when there are misunderstandings, it can reflect poorly on the company, which nobody wants if it's not appropriate.
Well, the discovery process, as I indicated, didn't work as well as we hoped. We didn't correctly interpret some of the information we received. I think the meeting that happened after the docket was closed should have happened when we filed our report, and it could have been cleared up much, much quicker. So I do think that communication could be improved, and I think it will be.
Well, I mean, I've got some other questions, but I don't think they serve a lot of purpose. I mean, I'm really curious about how that happens, but again, I'm not sure that's in the public interest. You know, you all know, presumably you've had a number of conversations about it, and I will, you know, Ms. Semler, presume that things will be done, you know, that the process will be improved. I do feel bad that the first report came out the way it did because I know that there was some, you know, media coverage about the proposed notices of violation and, you know, I certainly as one commissioner. I mean, I feel bad for Northwestern. I apologize that it came out that way, if it didn't have to. So, obviously, as we move forward, we'll get the right facts and we'll get the right report filed, and we'll move forward and with the other pending doc as well. So, thanks.
Any further testimony on this item by any parties? Saw some people moving towards the microphone like they were compelled to speak. So apparently not.
Stop someone from speaking.
Apparently not this time. Any other questions by commissioners? Is there a motion?
Yes, I would move that the commission reopen the docket and accept staff's amended safety report. At this point, is any additional motion? I mean, I know we'll wait for the new report to be filed. Do we then close the docket at that point, or can we make a motion to close the docket once that report is received by Northwestern?
I'm curious on how that melds with accepting staff's amended safety report. We obviously need to.
Sure, we'll go ahead and see it first. I'll just leave the motion as reopen the docket and accept staff's amended report.
Any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Docket PS08-001 in the matter of the filing of the investigation of the natural gas incident of February 20, 2008 on Montana-Dakota Utilities System in Pierre, South Dakota. The question before the commission is, today shall the commission approve the request for confidential information, and how shall the commission proceed regarding the supplemental data filed by staff? Staff filed an addendum to their initial report on September 3, 2008. MDU filed a request for access to confidential information on October 7, 2008. Mr. Gertis, you are representing MDU?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Staff, did you have something to...
I do. One of the parties cannot be here at this meeting, and so we would ask that this item be deferred. And, in fact, we have set up an ad hoc meeting for the 30th, at which these issues in their entirety will be discussed.
All right. Mr. Gertis?
Okay. I hadn't understood that the request for access to confidential information was going to be deferred as well. And we can certainly do that. I wish we would have had this conversation before, because I misunderstood the way this was going to go, because it would be helpful for Montana, Dakota to be able to see the confidential information before the ad hoc meeting.
The CIP can't be here, and so I thought that spoke for itself and that none of the issues could be addressed.
All right. Well, we'll just handle it at the ad hoc.
I'll make a motion that we defer to the 30th. I believe the ad hoc meeting's been set up and everything. Is there any discussion on that? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. The motion carries. PS08-001 is deferred to the 30th. Next item on our agenda are telecommunication issues. In the matter of the petitions for suspension or modification of 47 U.S.C. Section 251B, Subsection 2 of the Communications Act of 1934, as amended in dockets TC08-006 through TC08-027 inclusive. And the question before the Commission at this time is, shall the commission approve the stipulation? The stipulation was filed on October 3rd, 2008. And that was filed by?
The petitioners and Altel and Verizon.
Thank you. Would you like to address the commission?
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. Margo Northrup from the Ryder Rogers Law Firm. I'm here today on behalf of the petitioner, Lex. Mary Sisak is also on the phone on behalf of Swiftel. We are here today asking for you to approve the stipulation that the parties have reached in this matter. We have filed confidential settlement agreements between each individual petitioner and Altel and each petitioner and Verizon. And we've also filed a stipulation. The stipulation is what we're asking for approval of. In the stipulation, we're asking for a temporary suspension until the agreed-upon dates. The parties have agreed, although it wasn't clear in the stipulation, we would agree that an attachment could be placed on the stipulation that would show each date that the temporary suspension is being requested for. We're also asking for modification language of petitioner's obligation to provide LNP, and we've included that in the stipulation.
Thank you. The staff? There are a number of people on the phone with us. Do any of you wish to address the commission on this item?
This is Phil Schakenberg on behalf of Verizon Wireless. I'd agree with the comments of Ms. Northrup, and I think Mr. Wazork and I have also spoken, and I think both Altel and Verizon really don't have anything further to say. We're certainly able to answer questions if that's necessary.
Ms. Sisak?
Yes, I support Ms. Northrup's comments and have nothing further to add.
Mr. Wazork?
I'd endorse the previous comments, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you much. Are there any comments by staff on this item?
Thank you, Mr. Rolaine Weist. Staff would support the stipulation and agrees that we need to have an attachment showing the suspension dates that were in the LNP settlement agreement that was filed as confidential. The only other thing that we would note is that stipulation language that they're asking for in the PUC order does request a modification of pursuant to 251F2, and since it would be a modification pursuant to the federal act, I believe that the commission would have to determine under what standard it is granting that modification. And it's not addressed actually in the stipulation. I believe staff's opinion is that the commission could find it under to avoid imposing a requirement that is unduly economically burdensome, and that would be our recommendation.
Thank you. Any concern with those recommendations?
No, this is Margo Northrup again. The petitioners would support the unduly economical burdensome language in the stipulation. I won't speak on behalf of the other interveners. You may need to ask them, but we would support that.
Thank you. Any questions by the commissioners?
This is Phil Schenkerberg. May I speak briefly?
Please.
On behalf of Verizon Wireless, Verizon Wireless believes that the stipulation can and should be accepted as it was written. We don't believe that it's necessary to make a finding. If a finding were to be made, I think Ms. Weiss has identified the right sub-provision of that statutory provision to refer to. We do have a docket that was open. Intervention was sought from a wireless standpoint by Verizon Wireless and Altel, and these two parties have signed on to the stipulation. And we believe the stipulation could be granted as it was written without making such a finding.
Thank you. Does Altel or Swiftel have any comment?
This is Mary Sisak. Swiftel supports the comments made by Ms. Northrup.
And Altel?
I believe Mr. Schenkenberg correctly stated our position in that we believe the stipulation could be entered as drafted. But if the commission feels they have to make a finding that the staff's recommendation for the second subpart would be the correct one.
Thank you. Questions by the commission?
Ms. Weiss, could you just repeat that one more time for me?
The standard that I would recommend that the commission grant it under, since they are actually asking for a modification of a 251B requirement, is the one that says to avoid imposing a requirement that is unduly economically burdensome. And I would just point out that, you know, the parties have agreed that LNP will be provided, so we're really talking about, you know, not a huge modification in this case, so I think it could meet the unduly economically burdensome.
Thank you.
Any other questions by the commission? Commissioner Johnson.
Well, I understand the stipulation does, well, to speak in generalities, you note that it's void if it's modified. The parties have stated they wouldn't want it modified, but Mr. Schenkenberg, you know, I look at that stipulation. It just asks that the PUC order contain some language. It doesn't talk about the PUC, that being the exhaustive information in the PUC order. I mean, you don't think the PUC putting in the condition, as we mentioned, or the finding, would in any way void the stipulation, do you?
Mr. Schenkenberg, we are not hearing anything from you. If your mic is or your phone is on mute.
I'm sorry. I'm here. I apologize.
No problem.
I don't believe it would void the stipulation, no.
Okay. Thanks very much. And the question for any of the parties to the agreement. You know, I know the agreements were filed confidentially. I know that there's some rates in there that maybe people, you know, that are important to keep confidential. But as far as a timeline, I mean, isn't there some value to the public understanding what sort of timeline their telecommunications provider might be under for the implementation of LNP? Is there a good reason that that's filed confidentially for anyone to answer?
Ms. Weiss, did you have some?
Right. I believe that is the part that I did discuss this with the parties yesterday. And that is the part that we will attach, because you're right. We need the actual suspension times need to be out in the public.
So even though the agreement's been filed confidential, and I think the agreement was the only place where I could find that timeline.
Exactly.
Okay, but there will be an addendum to the commission order.
Right, and just to clarify, I would just ask all the parties if they agreed with that there should be an attachment on the stipulation showing the dates for the temporary suspension. Does anyone object to that?
This is Phil Schenkenberg. Just to be clear, we did discuss that as we were negotiating this, and I think the parties all recognized that those dates were going to need to be within a commission order. It was not included in the stipulation language, and we'd identified that as an issue. To make sure we discussed with Ms. Weiss before the order was issued.
Good. Well, that certainly, you know, takes care of my concern. So then should any commission motion include that language, a finding of unduly burdensome or economic effect, as well as that the order contain the dates of implementation?
That's my recommendation. It just seems to me that if the actual commission order, I know it's pursuant to a stipulation, but if the actual commission order is actually making a modification under 251F2, I would think that the commission would actually have to make a finding as to support the rationale for making that modification, because once the commission has that in the order, it doesn't just affect these parties. It's a modification going forward that affects other parties.
Great.
Or other potential providers.
Great. Thanks very much.
Any further questions? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the commission approve the filings, the stipulations that were filed, along with recommendations from staff dealing with the justification for the modification and including the implementation dates in the commission order.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. TC08-065, in the matter of the complaint filed by MCI Communication Services Incorporated, doing business as Verizon Business Services, against Capital Telephone Company, Incorporated, regarding traffic pumping. The question to the commission is, shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss and close the docket? Mid-Continent filed a motion to dismiss with prejudice. Mr. Gertis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent MCI Communications Services, doing business as Verizon Business Services. This is a traffic pumping complaint that was filed by MCI against the Capital Telephone. The parties have engaged in rather long and detailed negotiations and have settled their differences, and so there's no need for the complaint to go forward. and therefore we're asking that the complaint be dismissed.
Are there any other parties who wish to address the commission on this item? Does staff have something? Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. Staff would recommend granting the motion to dismiss.
Thank you. Questions by the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move that the commission grant the motion to dismiss and close the dockets. With prejudice. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
TC08-111 in the matter of the application of Network Innovations Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant a COA to Network Innovations Incorporated? TC08-111 is... as representative on the phone, is there anything you wish to state to the commission at this juncture?
No, Chairman.
Ms. Semler, are you handling that? No, Mr. Binder.
Hi, this is Tim Binder for staff. On September 10th, 2008, Network Innovations filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. The applicant has met the requirements for granting certificate of authority and has provided staff with all requested information. Network Innovations Incorporated has agreed that it will not offer prepaid services, including calling cards, and will not require nor accept deposits or advance payments. And with that, we do recommend that we grant a certificate of authority to Network Innovations with the restrictions.
Thank you. Any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion?
I motion TC08-111 that the commission grant the certificate of authority to Network Innovations.
And discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. TC08-113 in the matter of the application of Midstate Telecom Incorporated for a COA to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to Midstate Telecom Incorporated? I see that Midstate Telecom is represented on the phone. Ms. Horman, did you have anything for us?
No, I'm just here if anyone has questions.
Thank you. Mr. Binder.
Okay, again, on September 12, 2008, Midstate Telecom Incorporated filed an application for certificate authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in exchanges served by Quest throughout South Dakota. MTI did request confidential treatment of its financial information. The applicant has met the requirements for granting certificate authority and has provided staff with all requested information. Midstate Telecom has agreed to will not offer prepaid services and will not require or accept deposits for advance payments. With that, staff does recommend the commission grant a certificate of authority to Midstate Telecom Incorporated with prepaid restrictions in exchanges served by Quest throughout South Dakota.
Thank you, Mr. Binder. Any questions by the commissioners? If not, is there a motion?
I'll move the commission grant the COA.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries.
With restrictions?
Yeah, my shorthand was a little too short, Mr. Chairman. There were a number of restrictions recommended by staff, but I didn't include that in my motion. So perhaps I'd like to make a second motion that we approve the COA with the recommendations of staff.
Thank you. A motion to reconsider the motion. Pass the second motion is accepted. Discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Knadel. First item, another item under electric, is our addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting, EL08-011, in the matter of the petition for electrical services by South Dakota Oilseed Processors, LLC, to have Northwestern Energy assigned as its electric provider in the service area of Dakota Energy Cooperative Incorporated. On October 17, 2008, parties filed a confidentiality agreement, settlement agreement, and a service rights exception agreement requesting the commission approve the service rights agreement. Question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the joint request for an electric service exception? Mr. Kenneke, are you first up on this one?
I certainly can be, Commissioner. Thank you. This morning I'm appearing on behalf of Northwestern Energy. Earlier this year, We filed along with these oilseed processors a Section 56 petition seeking an order of the commission that Northwestern be allowed to serve the oilseed processors plant east of Miller. The plant has been built over the summer and into the fall and is ready to begin taking electrical service later on this week. We recently entered into an agreement with Dakota Energy, the incumbent provider in that area, and which would be for that location, but for the fact that the applicant, the oilseed processors, went through a process to which involved both Dakota Energy and Northwestern. Northwestern was ultimately selected to be the provider for that plant. I'm very pleased that this settlement agreement has been reached and filed, and we'd ask the commission to bless that this morning so the plant can begin taking power later this week.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, are you the attorney for Dakota Energy?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to proceed?
I would concur with the sentiments and the statements of Mr. Kennecke we have received items of discovery from him, and we would be in agreement with his position, and we have executed the settlement agreement, service rights exception agreement.
Thank you. And Mr. Gates, are you representing, you are represented by Mr. Peterson, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Did you have anything to add?
You know, I don't.
All right.
Paul, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the phone or present with us today who wishes to make representation on EL08-011?
Only if this is Ken Gates again with Dakota Energy. If there are questions that come up, I'm the CEO of the cooperative. I have Lynn Cruz there, our manager of operation, also on the line of East River, Bob Starr and Greg Hollister.
Thank you very much. Do any of those gentlemen have anything that they wish to present at this time? If not, Mr. Jacobson?
Thank you, Commissioner. as you know, this docket at the last minute was switched to a 4934A55 filing. In that statute, there are a number of factors which it says the commission shall consider, and among those, duplication of facilities. I think that's obvious. That has been addressed. Provision of adequate service. Staff has received information for Northwestern if it satisfies that requirement. The one thing we don't have is kind of a comparison, which we've asked all companies lately, which became an issue with Xcel recently, if you recall. We do have the cost and the description of the facilities that it would take Northwestern to provide service, but we don't really have anything from Dakota Co-op. And I was wondering if it'd be possible just for the Mr. Gates or somebody there to give a brief description of what either the length of the extension necessary or the some kind of a description of the facilities that would have been necessary to be built in order to compare that to Northwestern to see that Northwestern's providing service here is the economical alternative in this case.
Okay.
So this is Ken Gateskin. I'd be happy to do that. The service to the facility from our side of things would involve a new 1.5-mile, 69 kV transmission tap from East River's existing 69 kV transmission network. And then we'd have 7.5 MVA of transformation capacity, and from the new 69-12-5 kV substation located, that would have been located at the site. And East River would have ended up building built about 1/4 mile of 12.47 distribution line to the facility as well. And it would have involved four 1,500 kVA transformers, and that is with the option without the boiler There were two options in this proposal, one with the electric blower, one without. If there was, and we aren't aware which one they went with Northwestern, but if there were two, if they did go with the electric boiler option, there would have been two additional 1,500 kVA transformers.
Thank you, Mr. Gates. Mr. Jacobson, did you have anything else?
No, I guess not. Not from a layman's terms. I don't know if there's any legal questions about this, what's happening here.
I can tell you, this is Don Peterson. Mr. Jacobson, I can tell you based on the information that Dakota Energy received from Northwestern that the total bid numbers that Dakota Energy submitted with the boiler and without the boiler are both higher than what Northwestern's bid was.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson.
Ms. Kramer, did you have anything?
Staff would recommend approving the electric service rates exception.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to make a presentation on this item? Commissioner, questions? Is there a motion? I will move that in EL08-011 that the Commission approve the joint request for an electric service rights exception according to the recommendations made by staff. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Is there any further business come before us at this time? If not, announcements. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held November 12, 2008 at 9:30 in room 464 of the State Capitol Building and Pier. Commission meetings are scheduled for November 25, December 9. The Public Utilities Commission offices will be closed Tuesday, November 11 in observance of Veterans Day. Public Utilities Commission offices will be closed Thursday in observance of Thanksgiving. PUC offices will be closed Thursday, December 25, in observance of Christmas. Thank you all very much for joining us today, and is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Those opposed signify by saying no. Motion carries. We're adjourned.